that we will, in fact, lose our freedoms. The history of other countries that have collapsed would indicate that the dissatisfaction by a substantial segment of the population led to a variety of extremist approaches, and then ultimately led to the destruction of democratic governments. Now, I believe that full employment, what you've been talking about, is an absolute essential if the society is progressing in the future as it has in the past. And I believe that the beginning that has been made in the second draft of the Humphrey-Hawkins bill, which combines a flat commitment to full employment with a method of beginning the planning necessary to achieve it in the nation, is the right beginning. And I think what we're now in the process of is moving in to the beginning of the legislative fight. Because while government cannot do the job, it has to take a lead in encouraging all other elements in the society to coordinate and help do the job. We'll take everything we've got, business, labor, all the brains we've got, all the abilities we've got, to move this economy from where it is now with much too high a rate of unemployment to a point where it does not have a rate of unemployment. My goal of unemployment is frictional. That means that only the people who are between jobs are unemployed. And I'd like to point out that many countries do much better than the United States in terms of unemployment. Most of the developed countries today do better in terms of the level of unemployment. And I think we can learn from some of the other countries what needs to be done. You've cited a variety of proposals that need to be taken into account. Most of them are done in one country or another. But I happen to believe that it won't be possible for this society to continue to function if we have the tragedy of unemployment as it is today. And I welcome your testimony because it seems to me that it adds to the beginning, which started at the beginning of this week before the Hawkins Subcommittee in the House of Representatives, which adds to the efforts made by the Senator and other Senators in introducing the new version of the Hawkins-Humphrey bill. We're beginning the legislative fight, and that is the important phase. We're moving from conversation to action, and I think your testimony gives us a great boost.
I just want to add that not only is your testimony give us a great boost in the movement of development of national employment policy and the process to achieve, but we will need your active participation before the committees in the Congress and the assistance of the action in the Congress. One way or another, the American people have a right to know what the Congress is going to do on these matters. I would like to point out also that what we have presented in these bills, H.R. 50 and S. 50, the full employment and balanced growth bills, is above all a procedure, methodology for achieving the goal of not more than 3% adult unemployment. And we put it within a time frame that is realistic. It is no pie in the sky. It is no theoretical exercise. It is a very practical, achievable objective. And we're going to need the Conference of Catholic Bishops. We're going to need the Protestant churches. We're going to need members of the Jewish faith, we're going to need the labor movement, we're going to need the conference of mayors, we're going to need business people, all of them will give us this helping hand, because this legislation won't be without. We're going to need the same coalition to get this accomplished that we did for the Comprehensive Civil Rights Act of 1964. And I might say that civil rights are very meaningless if people are poverty-ridden, if they are jobless, if they're the victims of violence and victims of crime, become drug addicts, if they're lost in the ghetto and in the areas of poverty and economic trouble, civil rights can vanish. That's a theoretical exercise. Now, having given my point of view, and I've expressed it before, and I turn to our discussants, those who have participated in our regional hearings. And we'll start out now. We'll start out with Dr. Brenner, and we'll move right on now to Finney and Mr. Boy. And what I'd like to have here is
the
time piece of attention.
Finding acceptable.
economic sense. And particularly defined over the short term by fluctuations in unemployment, and over the long term by the per capita income of those national products. The point we seem to be coming to as perhaps unpleasant to some, unpleasant to others, it may sound, is that with economic fluctuations, with the kinds of solutions that members of the panel here have been discussing, all of which involve money, money remedies. With money remedies, we are fundamentally talking about the purchase of length of life. This is a very peculiar concept. I think both the medical and the logical circles, let alone the economics of the political system of the United States government, we have not earlier thought that money expenditures per se influence directly and indirectly for very large aggregates of populations the actual length of life. In fact, this is statistically demonstrable. It is demonstrable in aggregate for mortality and for specific causes. What the latter seems to me in turn is that while we seem as a nation to be quite prepared to spend dollars for purposes of care on an individual level or even on a national level, and discussions of mental health insurance, we're quite prepared to spend money on healthcare and it involves health and mental health. We have not seen ourselves quite ready yet to take a preventive remedy position of expending money for the health of the economy, and particularly to this point since we do accomplish far more than is possible under the healthcare system, in terms specifically of the length of life, in terms specifically of mental disorder and physical disorder. I think soon we must come to the recognition of the translation of such dollars as into length of life and morbidity and into aggression. And also, we have to face the economic and political reality that any case. Since testifying at the Atlanta Regional Meetings, many of you mentioned the findings of the American Association for Transgender Science, I have not made public the findings of the study prepared by myself for the United Nations on aggression and justice vis-a-vis the economy, based on information in three countries, the United States, England, Wales, and Canada.
bring about particular increases in the rates of suicide, homicide, accidents, and several other causes of mental and physical disorders. Despite the long-term growth of the economy, the unemployment fluctuations remain and remain quite substantial. Indeed, so serious is that problem that for late teenage years of those in their 20s, the mortality rate has actually increased.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brennan. Mr. Finney, I might just that each of you identify yourself in terms of your association and relationships.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Depression over the last
fertilized and robbed. And we yet spend $5,000 to incarcerate them for a year, and yet won't spend $5,000 to keep them on the streets and give them a job and or subsidize them until they can be able to afford a job. And I just wonder why and how we can continue to tolerate a situation such as this. I'm persuaded we have a serious problem in energy, and it worries me as it worries all of America. But I wonder, we talk about harnessing electric energy, we talk about harnessing gas, we talk about harnessing oil, but we haven't gotten around to harnessing and exploring our most valuable resource and energy source, and that's the manpower. We haven't harnessed this great population of ours, that 35 million of us that are not harnessed, that we're letting trickle through the system. 17 million we know for sure are unemployed, and yet this is a tremendous source of what about using it? Aren't there creative means of using human energy that might supplement it all in our dwindling oil resources? I know an allergist or geologist or anything like that. I'm a human being, and I know that there are people around who can work, and it seems to me that muscles and their ability to work is a source of energy, and yet we don't use it. We concentrate all of our time on conserving oil and not putting in production human manpower, human energy. And I just find that somewhat unacceptable, and I wonder why we can't get at that. We conducted manpower training programs, and as I testified before this very same committee earlier this year, last year, I showed and demonstrated to this committee that we were able with manpower training program to turn tax leaders into tax generators, that we were able, in fact, to pay for every manpower training program as submitted by Mr. George. Every manpower training program that we've ever conceived is already paid for itself, because we have been able to put people back in the productive workforce, and they have paid taxes and gone back into our general tax reserves. I'm worried somewhat by this concept of the trickle-down effect. I'm worried also about that they fail government, too. I think that when the time of crisis, the government has an obligation to intervene in order to assure that its citizenry or citizen is well taken care of. I worry about this notion of somehow stimulating business to maybe at the bottom thing to trickle down. Well, I submit, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that we don't need a trickle-down effect for the nation's poor, not in my neighborhood. We need a series of tidal waves. We need massive input into our community in order to save them. And I'm also persuaded by something else, and that is that every urban city in this country, and I've visited most of them, every urban city in this country is in serious trouble. Serious trouble, not just from unemployment, but from the fact that goods and services are dwindling. And yet, we cannot conceive of a way to use our manpower to put goods and services back into our urban city. Why can't we think about ways of using our manpower to put goods and services, housing, for instance, the people in North, industry in North? You can see that North, as many urban cities, has lost much of its housing stock, has lost much of its industry, has lost much of its commerce. Why can't we use our manpower Yes.
Mr. Benny, I not in any way argue with anything you say, but just to make an additional point, I represent basically about 500,000 people in South Central Louisiana. We're poor, who for the last 5 years, the unemployment rate, and the figures there are less than they are even in the city, because they're scattered, they're hard to find, the people are hard to find, they don't know where to go and report. But for the last 5 years, the unemployment rate has exceeded the national average every year by at least 1.5%. All those that are reporting. All those that are reporting.
How many people is that?
About 500,000, I've never translated it into the number of people.
Yeah, but see, that's what continues to worry me. We continue to talk about percentages of people, and we don't look at the idea that at some point there's a human being that's behind that percentage.
I recognize every one of them as human beings, because I drive down those country roads in that South Louisiana French and area, and I see them, and I know them as human beings. I run into them as people that are... That just can't find a job anywhere. All I'm saying, and I'm going in anyway, take away from what you say, but that a great deal of the attention has been given to the metropolitan and to the urban area. And the problem is just as real in dealing with human beings in those areas as it is in the urban area. They're just harder to find because they're scattered over broader areas.
There's no question about that, Congressman. That which also reminds me, I think, one question I would like to pose to everybody here, and that is, I think that we're going to have to relate two things. We have a large portion of our population that's just simply unemployed. We have to admit it. No sense in ducking. And we have also a large portion of our population that is employed. Now, any program that we devise, and I don't know what happened to that, I hope that this Senate Bill 50 doesn't fall the same fate of the family assistance program, where it was talked to death in one voted in one house, talked to death in another, when nothing ever happened to it. But the point is that I think that we're going to have to relate these two matters. One is that we have to have a guaranteed annual income for those who are simply unemployable that is livable. I'm not talking about something that we can afford or something that we can make it afford, but that is livable. That our senior citizens in this are eating out of garbage cans because the old age benefit contribution they made over the productive years of their lives is not adequate for them to sustain themselves in an inflationary economy. You just plain not adequate. We have people who are on welfare who have to manage to eat one meal a day in order to sustain themselves, so there's not enough in the welfare markets for them to sustain themselves. That is one side of the picture. The other side is the matter of what are we going to do for those who are unemployed.
Task of government in this field that we're discussing right now is to cleanup, to reorganize, and to establish under recent standards a program of family assistance. Absolutely essential to get away from what we've got here. Let me just quickly say that I want to turn over to anybody else. Your figure on incarceration, $5,000. I want to help you. It's about 12 per person. About $12,000 per person that is incarcerated in anything else but county jail.
The president's in the past, beginning, certainly with Roosevelt, back in the 30s. That was my really my question, Senator. My question rather was, because of the inflamed statistics, which are still being backed around here, nobody else is sure. Why is that being so high for government-sized communities to get on the stick and try to develop work programs, etc.? That's the gist of that question. Why isn't there any studies being done on solar energy technology in thousands of employees, engineers, brains that astound these gentlemen are knowledgeable if you get them unemployed? And they can't get jobs now. Let me tell you why they can't get jobs. Because they are over 40 years old. And any company, any corporation, an insurance policy, group insurance policy, as soon as you get the age of 40, the price goes up. So it's uneconomical for them to hire. Because they're too old. My problem is I'm too young. And I don't have a college degree. 2 weeks ago to this very day, I was told by the company president of a large firm in the Boston area, after consulting three times with the vice president of the company who wanted to hire me, everything that they needed, I had. Company president asked me one question. Do you have a college degree? I said, no, I have an associate's degree. He said, when do you expect to get it? I go to night school. Continue. I said, 1977, next year. He handed me everything back and said, see you next year. The vice president's mouth dropped. He could not believe it. The president also went on to say, do not go for your master's degree, don't even bother with us. I know among the board school teachers with doctorate degrees, they have to prostitute themselves when they go for a job. They have to tell the school board that they have a bachelor's degree. They cannot go for and say they have a master's or a doctorate's. It's that bad. I represent a group of unemployed professionals. 40% who are teachers, unemployed school teachers. 35% that are professional technicians in science and engineering firms, engineers. And the other 35%, attorneys. Attorneys who cannot get a job because they did not graduate from Harvard, Yale, Dartmouth.
Outside the office, the local office of the people collect their checks.
don't care anymore. I asked the manager of the local office, what type of job are you getting here?
Local office, you see.
These are the claims offices, Senator.
Without my account, 10 checks.
The RSTAT provides the services of open listings. For the majority of minimum wage for dishwashers, clerical, secretarial. Now, how can you justify minimum wage at, say, $2.25, $2.50 an hour? And after taxes, probably take home a check of $80 to $85 a week when the state pays you $90 a week, tax free, paid you not to work. This is the type of situation that we have faced.
That sounds like a statement made by one of my hardline right-wing businessmen. You have in common with them. Are you saying that we have unemployment compensation levels so high that it really pays not out of work?
Well, how do you, I'd like to put a caveat in there. How do you live on $80 a week? I mean, but you know, they talk about unemployment compensation levels high. Am I getting into this syndrome too? But I want to tell you something. When you get out of home, I happen to live in the city of Minneapolis, which is the fourth highest cost living city in the United States, according to that survey. And I do live on $80 a week.
My wife works there.
And let me tell you, that's the point. I mean, the real point is, instead of talking about the levels of unemployment compensation being too high, how are you going to buy shoes? A mother got to want to buy the children's shoes, the little baby shoes, at $12, $14 for a little pair of shoes that are half as big as that. And she's got to have shoes. If you've got to heat your home, how are you going to pay for that heat? How are you going to pay for that rent? I'm talking about people that don't want to go on welfare. The working poor of this country. And I think a lot of us who are living very well, we forget about the working poor in this country. And they're just an awful lot of those people. Now you get talking, Mr. Roy, because when you were in Boston, you were telling me about these scientists, these technicians that have ability and talent, and the government has spent millions to train them. You know, everybody that goes to college is subsidized. Every person that ever went to the university or college, any place in the United States, has been the recipient of the largest subsidy that's been given to any individual citizen. We all know that. We all owe the country something. We all owe the country at least 5 years of our life because we were paid for. When I graduated from the university, I was given my education like people who never got a chance to go to the university. And I haven't forgotten that. Those were the senators that got a college education or anybody else. So what about these people that you were telling me about in Boston? Don't you worry, you're not, you're just be like you're in Boston. Boston never scared me, I don't want to scare you. Just get in that game.
Thank you, Senator. What I'm trying to do is to get a whole discussion going here.
You got to go on.
I belong to a group of automotive professionals, and we band together to conduct workshops, and we try to retrain each other how to go about getting a job, how to go about finding a job. And for instance, we know, for instance, our group, with about 500 active members any given week of the year, that's unemployed, by the way. We're all unemployed, we're not paid. And yet, we do a great service. I mean, I've seen people come in shaking. Dr. Finney, talking about the health problem with unemployment. Have you ever seen a man walking before in January as bright and chipper, knowing he's going to wake up? If you see him 6 months later, that man's ready for a heart attack. I have seen it. It's just incredible. The whole changed personality of the man, coming up with rash. The physiological makeup of the person causes such distress. And we help place people back to the job market. We have a placement service. We openly solicit jobs from companies, and we try to match our people with these open positions. So far, we move about 1 out of 4 on a weekly average, which isn't bad. It could be so much better. But we have plenty of problems with discrimination. We know, for instance, our local newspaper, the Boston Globe, Sunday, it advertises the help wanted ads. And the first page is company A, no name. The second page is the same size company B. And yet they will not talk to the unemployed. They are simply advertising from each other's personnel. It's called company sabotage, it's called whatever you want to call it. But they will not talk to any unemployed individual. And I mentioned, I offer this testimony of people. You have your name sometime. Just try a local advertiser on a newspaper. Have one call up and say, I work for so-and-so. And have the other one call up and say, I'm unemployed. And let me get a reaction. Find out what yourself looks like. The corporations, the personnel people, have to be so retrained that you can print out a paper and they think they'll get 25 or 50 resumes. They get 1,000 first Sunday, the New York Times. The Tuesday, Wall Street Journal, 800. The Boston Globe, 500. These people are amazed. I've gone into interviews and the man throws his hands up when I ask him how many people answered. I never believe the amount of people answered. It's usually their answer. They have to be re-educated. This is our field. Back in Boston, I did more of a chronological type of presentation. Usually the first 2 weeks when you get your piece slip or whatever, you take a little vacation. But after that, you start looking in the newspapers and going to the employment agencies. And in the meantime, you're painting your house 6 times and mowing your grass 3 times and raking the leaves. But you can only do so much. And the frustration keeps building and building. And I might say that credit keeps building and building. Bills still come in. The oil has to be paid. Gasoline has to be paid. Telephone has to be paid. So all these compound traumatic experiences really, I can see, cause some psychological and physiological unpleasantness. It's the human factor we're talking about. And there's also a very definite of being unemployed. Let me put it to you this way. You find out who your friends are awfully fast. And as soon as you truthfully tell the employment person, the personnel, the hiring person that you're unemployed, it completely turns off to the job at hand. He wants to know why you're unemployed. And this is the type of situation that we always come across. I venture to guess anybody here can try it for themselves. I'd like to address Bishop Roush because I don't know where the church has been all this time, but finally there's nothing to do something about it. They know they feel the patient for unemployment. Their parishioners can't put money in the basket. Our group has been asked on several occasions now to go out to church groups and to talk to the parishioners. And not one. We've had no less than 50 people at any one of these church groups. And we do this free of charge. But this is the point I was trying to make earlier, Senator Percy. Why does it take that so long? I mean, what's happened here is that the unemployment have to turn to themselves. It's the great story about the American people. They're going to do it themselves.
Can I interrupt to tell you why? For the same reason that the American people were alerted to the energy shortage, there was never any lack of information on it. Any more than there was any lack of information about the fact that the Soviets were going to launch Sputnik. We knew what they were going to do. It's all been there. We got information glut. But I happen to think that Americans, like most people, have what I call physiological politics. Empty stomach, full head, full stomach, empty head. Until disaster comes. How do most people take care of their health? They go barging around, abusing themselves until one day they get a little heart attack. Hopefully it's only a little one. Or it's something else that goes wrong, and all at once they're out jogging, and they're swallowing the vitamin pills, and they're looking for organic food, deep breathing, and doing push-ups, and all sorts of things up until then, why it's pot belly, you know, and they're huffing and puffing. And it is, I suppose, it's a part of the equation. By the way, I want to take note right now that I want the staff, I think my colleagues are very appreciative of this, to give us a state-by-state unemployment compensation rate. So that we have, for example, the set in Boston, which is, say, $90 or $80, whatever it is, but like you know what it is in South Dakota, Minnesota, Arkansas, Indiana, Mississippi, California, New Jersey. We'll take a look and see how people get to it. One state I go up to $60 a week.
In closing, Senator, if I may, it's gotten to the point for myself personally that I have given up. I have given up. So when I came to Washington, I brought my own personal resume. I dread the day when I turned 40 years old, believe me. Because when I turned 40, if I was in the private sector, I'd probably be laid off. Just because of the general principle that I don't want. It's too costly. So I'm going to have to become a politician before that time.
Just can't leave it to industry alone to do it. You must have the public sector
currently, or in the state of the economy, in a given area, in order to get people into jobs.
I have just 1 minute left, so I appreciate it. If you could have 1 or 2 word answer from Andrea. And could we add, too, that many of you have working relationships with Leon Sullivan's industrialization centers? Could you comment to whether that approach should be something we should really beef up now and more actively fund?
I would just like to make a comment about, and I don't know if I'm hitting the nail on the head at all here, but it seems to me that if we're going to give business a break anywhere, we ought to give them a break when they invest in people. If in our operation we have about 320 employees and we have a program in the building where any person can further his education at our expense if it's job related, and he gets time off from work and we pay the tuition if he or she successfully completes the course. These people can leave us once they get that degree or whatever it may be. I don't worry about that at all, and I better not in my position, but the fact is that what we have done is we have invested in human beings. This country spends billions and billions of dollars on education every year for our people, but then when they're done, there's no place for them to go. This is another problem that I think needs to be looked at. But I'd like to address something else while I have an opportunity, and that is, I taught the... This will be very brief. I just want to make a comment that I taught the Full Employment Act for 10 years to high school kids. These kids didn't believe that act because of what they experienced, except at election time. Then jobs became available again, but if they were in an unemployed family, they said the law isn't doing any good. On paper, it's good, but it doesn't have teeth in it. I think whatever this Congress does, however you fashion that legislation, it's got to be legislation that's got teeth in it, that it's really going to be not a political tool, but a tool for human development.
If my short response to that is that on-the-job training with a job at the end of it has been demonstrated to be successful, and as Mrs. Fenny pointed out, we used it in the city of New York, has been used effectively, and I think it's a good program.
What do you think about the investment tax credit that might be in the area of severe unemployment?
I like the on-the-job training program better. I am not opposed to the cost of the capital investment center.
On the unemployment program, I would say this, that in a depressed community, the best volunteer is paid volunteer. And I don't want to cut the program, any program, but if it does not carry a stipend with it, all right, it cannot be anywhere close as effective as a program that carries a stipend. Because in many instances, those people don't have no means they need some support.
I would like to say, Mr. Miller, that we appreciate you being here. I want to provoke you to tell me a story that I thought you had. But I don't want you to leave here without a feeling that I'm out of comfort or thirsty, that I'm dealing in an ethereal sense with this problem. It was 40 years ago, right this year, my father got a job for the first time, I think, in 4 years at the bottom of the Depression study job. And we were on the roof. And I saw the crushing, humiliating effect of one man that had worked all his life as a skilled worker and couldn't get a job. And he wouldn't accept welfare. He sat there, were thrown out of apartments and had our phones cut off and had no way utilities and services. He fought and fought and fought to somehow stand on his feet. I know what people go through it. Senator Humphrey knows just as well as I know Senator Javis come through. We're trying to find the right program. And your appearance here today just reminding us of the fact that what we went through and saw our parents go through. People are going through today, they're not statistics to us at all. They're human beings we want to do something about. Your presence here has been immensely helpful to help us in planning the right way.
I think we'll have to conclude on this note.
Senator.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much.
You are terrific.
George, you're
thank you. Goodbye, Dr. Brenner. Goodbye, Mr. Roy.
I haven't seen you since Chicago. How you been? Thank you so much. Yeah. Oh, that's my guest. How you doing?
Yeah. Hi.